Welcome to Brad Golf Podcast, a podcast for the average golfer. My name is Dermot Bradfield and golf is in my blood. Join me as I fumble my way around this fascinating sport. Welcome back to Brad Golf. It's the 23rd of September 2020. This is episode 18 of the Brad Golf Podcast series. This week, joined again by the mighty Nigel, we're going to recap on the US Open. We look at Nigel's picks for the Irish Open this weekend. We'll discuss current events on the PGA Tour and back at home. As usual, please do subscribe to the podcast. You'll find Brad Golf on a multitude of sources, including Apple, Google, Spotify, and others. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. You'll find Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. And you'll find bradgolf.ie on Facebook. You can also contact us on bradgolftv@gmail.com. So let's get this party started. That was a golf one there for anyone who missed that. Hello, Nigel, and welcome.
Dermot, how are you? Keeping well?
Keeping well, thank you. It's Irish Open week. Are you looking forward to it? Having, I suppose, some of the best in the world and, I suppose, having the Open champion contesting for the Irish Open this year. Are you looking forward to it?
I'm looking forward to watching it. Definitely, I don't know Gal Gorm that well. I'm looking forward to seeing it on TV and to see a bit of local competition. It's great to see that Shane has made the trip over from the States to support the national championship. I think that's a big feather in his cap, in my book.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that the field isn't really as strong as previous years. But it should be very competitive. It probably will feel a bit more like one of the UK swing events that happened last month. The likes of the championships that happened at Celtic Manor and the Betfred British Masters or something like that. It's going to be along that sort of lines, you know, with a few big names and a lot of, quite a lot of up-and-coming and journeyman European Tour players, but it'll be competitive nonetheless.
And have you travelled to many Irish Opens in the past, just out of interest?
Yeah, I've been going to the Irish Open since I was a kid. The first one I think I went to was in Portmarnock in 82. My old man brought myself and my little brother along to one of the practice days. I think I have a picture with Sandy Lyle from years ago.
Oh, brilliant.
So I went to a lot of the Irish Open, the Carroll's Irish Open, as it was known back then, in Portmarnock and Royal Dublin. I saw Seve beat Bernard Langer. So the following year, Bernard Langer beat Seve. I saw Faldo in his prime. I walked around with him for a practice round. So yeah, it was back in the 80s, where my love of golf really and going to the Irish Open started, really. Now, I didn't see many in the 90s because I was a teenager then. I was more interested in other things.
Well, years ago, Nigel, the 80s were the best year for the Irish Open. Because when you look at the winners, Seve won three there. Langer won two in the 80s. He won three in total. You know, Faldo won a few. Woosnam. Like, the winners that they were there in the 80s were just, you know, what an incredible roll of honour of some of the greatest European players of all time in there. So it was probably the best period of the Irish Open in many respects.
I'd say it definitely is, but see, it was a great time. It was like a mini British Open in a way.
Yeah.
But one of the main reasons the big names would come over, and we used to get a lot of names from the States as well. Ben Crenshaw is a former winner of the Irish Open from the 70s. Hubert Green, remember Mark Capovecchio was over. There's always been big names in the States, but Carroll's were able to pay them appearance money, not the European Tour players as well. So there was a lot of money put into that tournament. And the only kind of parallel in recent times is when Dubai duty free came in, and it became a Rolex Series event that a comparable sort of field has actually come back to the Irish Open.
Yeah, where we had Ram, like where Ram was one.
Yeah,
obviously. You're getting players like that, absolutely. Yeah. Well, here's hoping it can return to that kind of a place again in the future. Obviously, this year it's a stopgap. We were supposed to be down in Mount Juliet, but under circumstances, it's great to just have it and that the Irish Open exists this year, because it looked highly unlikely there a couple of months ago. So yeah, definitely looking forward to watching some golf in Ireland over the weekend. It's our focus this week. We're taking our mind a bit away from the PGA, which is great. We've seen enough of it. And we're turning back to local shores. So that's going to be, I think, our focus this week. But if I can move and rewind back to, well, a recap of last weekend, but the big news, obviously, with Bryson winning the US Open. He won well, there's no doubt. A few people I've been talking to since said it was a bit of an anticlimax back on the last five or six holes, because of the way he pulled away. But it was still in the melting pot after the ninth, when they both got those eagles, Wolf and Bryson. And Wolf in particular, following up after Bryson's breaker, to get the eagle there, I thought this is going to be a fantastic final nine at that stage, that Wolf wasn't going away. But unfortunately, shortly afterwards, he fell away. DeChambeau's now the only player, was the only player to break par on the day, which was an incredible achievement when you're in the final group, to be the best scorer on the day by, what, three shots or more. Closing 67, gave him a six-shot victory. He hit 23 out of 56 fairways, which is a new record for the US Open, and not in a positive sense. The lowest since 1981 by four shots, which is incredible. But before I go into Bryson and all of the various things about Bryson, what did you think of the tournament and Bryson's performance over the week? So before we go into Bryson the man and what he's apparently doing to golf and all that kind of stuff, the tournament and the champion, how did you think it went?
Overall, I thought it was a very good major. I was actually expecting it to be better. It was built up a lot. Maybe I listened to too many other podcasts and too much of Sky Sports hype, and that I thought it was going to be an absolute one for the ages. It was a very good major. I think the course is a classic. It's an iconic course. The greens, kind of the all the crazy slopes that are built into it, the false fronts and all that, it's kind of reminiscent of some of the holes in Augusta. Only the fact that you have a lot of rough. I think the rough was, there was a lot made of the rough beforehand, how high it was going to be so hard to play out of. I don't think it played as big a factor as people thought it would, because as we saw from the leaders and obviously from Bryson, they were able to deal with quite well. You know, missing the fairway didn't penalize them a great deal, because they're hitting the ball so far down, and this is essentially the strategy that Bryson took, and actually he was kind of sort of vilified for before the tournament happened, and it turned out that it was a masterstroke, and he got his strategy spot on and played unbelievable. He was top 10 in all the categories of stats, whether it be strokes gained from the tee, strokes gained approach, strokes gained around the green. He putted unbelievable. Like, you know, you got to say, take your hat off to him. He performed fantastically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just don't think, I think, I suppose, the fact that he ran away from the field in the last nine holes meant that it was a bit of an anticlimax at the end.
Yeah,
and the fact that there was only really two of them in it going into the back nine, I thought it would have been a bit more of a ding-dong battle, but it didn't turn out that way. So, and having to have to focus on Bryson the whole way around as he's jibber-jabbering to himself. You know, he's playing great golf, but it's not easy to listen to his running commentary. It was kind of strange as well. I think it would have been a great tournament with the crowd. I think in New York galleries and the New York fans had an element, had an edge to a major. We saw that at Betpage in the PGA last year. I don't think Bryson would have won as easy if the New York crowd had been there. He would have got a fair few comments made about him from the crowd, and I think that would have unsettled him. I don't think that's something that you totally need in golf, but I think that made his his passage down the lat, the back nine, a lot easier.
I think so. That's a question for DeChambeau and for Morikawa as well is that, you know, winning a major with the crowd is different, and until they do that, is this always going to be a lesser major? If you know what I mean, that it's always going to be, well, that was a major without the crowd.
I think it was a bigger factor at Wingfoot than at the PGA, because the PGA, there were a lot more players in the mix going into the last few holes. I mean, at one stage there were six players on the in joint lead in the back nine of the PGA, and a lot of the players could actually see each other on the course. So while there wasn't fans there, there was a sense that they're actually competing against each other. They actually see players holing out or hitting a tee shot. So there was a bit more of a combative experience there. What this time was different. I think it was just two players in it, and then Bryson ran away with it. Amazing play. He deserved to be the champion. But from a viewing experience, it turned out to be a bit of a damn squib.
Yeah, it did. So the media circus is underway since he's won. You know, I'm seeing headlines like changing the face of golf. Is he good for golf? He himself believes the RNA and the USGA would be forced to belatedly take steps to try and rein in golf equipment. So what he has said is, well, it's tough to rein in athleticism. We're always going to try to get fitter, stronger, more athletic. Tiger inspired this whole generation to do this, and we're going to keep going after it. I don't think it's going to stop. I was hitting it on a normal average for players or tour player a year ago, and then I got a lot stronger, worked out every day, and all of a sudden, not because of clubs, because of me, I was able to gain 20 to 25 yards. And I'm not going to stop. Next week, I'm going to try 48-inch driver. We're going to be messing with some head designs and do some amazing things with Cobra to make it feasible to hit these drives, maybe 360, 370, maybe even further. I think I'm definitely changing the way people think about the game, and I hope my way inspires some people. So my own view, and I'm going to give you my view first, and then I'm going to bring you in, Nigel. My own view is, and I'll be straight up, not a fan of DeChambeau, the man, right, and the person. And like you said, his running commentaries, you know, frustrated me. He was telling everyone about the good shots he would hit around the course, and when they didn't go the way he had hoped, it was still a good shot. The running commentary gets to me. His portrayal of science is often used as a cover or a screen for something else, in my opinion. And so I just don't like the guy. He grates me, right? But I don't see how he is changing the face of golf. And I don't see how this is a question of, is he good for golf? Because Wolf hits the ball a mile, right? Wolf, if it were not for the last few holes, right, last seven or eight holes where he fell away, and let's be honest, he fell away because he played really poor. He lost his swing there for about four or five holes where he just could not hit a straight ball. On another day, he could have won it. And would we have been sitting down saying, well, you know, Wolf hits the ball 340 yards off the tee. Is he changing the face of golf? And he outdrove DeChambeau a number of times. So would we be saying the same thing there? I'm not sure we would be. I think Bryson is a lightning rod for this because of the type of person he is. He was excellent on Sunday, completely deserved it on his performance on Sunday. I'm not sure he has changed golf. I don't think that's fair to say. I think when you look at how well, I didn't think he would be able to hold up to the pressure on Sunday. I thought this swing that he has and this power that he's generating, I felt once he tenses up, once there's a bit of pressure coming down that stretch, he's going to start hitting wild ones all over the place. And he didn't. Even when it was, you know, there was only a shot in it, he was still smashing down the middle of the fairway. And, you know, I think that takes skill. That's not just a swing at it and I'll deal with it when I get down there. He was hitting the ball straight and under pressure. So I don't think he's changed golf. I'm more of the opinion, a bit like Padraig Harrington has stated, that he always had this distance and always had this power. He's just using it now and using it to great effect. So what do you think, Nigel? Do you think, is media going over the top on this? Or do you think he's the main driver for change in the sport at the moment? What's your view?
I think I'd agree with you to a certain extent. I think it's overblown, his possible revolutionizing of the game. I think there are other people who hit it as far as him, if not further. The likes of Tony Finau, Cameron Champ, and as you said, Matt Wolf outdrove him a couple of times. Now, admittedly, when Matt Wolf outdrove Bryson, it was with a lot of run. He didn't do it on the fly.
Yeah.
But the thing about Bryson is he's actually courted this publicity. Partly, I think there's a corporate or a profit angle here, as you can see from his acceptance speech when he got the trophy. He immediately went to thank his sponsors. So he is very much sponsor orientated and very much focused on the people who back him, the likes of Cobra Golf and all the analytics that go with it. He's heavily invested in that. He's talked about trying to clear the fence on driving ranges. He tries to clear the fence, you know, driving on, like, getting up to 200 miles an hour on ball speed. You know, he regularly talks about this. And part of it is to do with his rivalry with Brooks Koepka. He's built himself up to be even bigger than Brooks. I agree with you. I don't think he's revolutionized the game. I think there are other players who are hitting the ball far, and it's more of a general problem than a specific to Bryson. It's just that he's courted this publicity.
He has. And, you know, you said
I think a lot
10 in a lot of the categories, and I think that's forgotten here. It's that he won this around the green and on the greens. Like, that's where he won it. Yeah, the driving is sensational and it's very powerful and everything, but he's not the only one in the field with that. It was in and around the green and on the green that he won this one. And also, I think when it comes to this stuff about, you know, Cobra and about the driving and how far he hits it, he's controlling the message and he's controlling the conversation about him down that avenue, because there's a lot of dark avenues with DeChambeau, particularly around his pace of play, and that is not being discussed. Even though, you know, pace of play is a real issue there, it's not being discussed because he's driving the conversation towards, I'm a big hitter, I'm a muscle man. And I think that's part of it, is that he's happy for this conversation to go this way because it's not a negative thing towards him, the person, play issue. Yeah.
But the negative side to Bryson is never too far away. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I think people respect him for the length that he's achieved off the tee, the increase in driving.
Yeah.
I think people would completely lambaste him and caricature him even further if he didn't have the game to go with it. Because some of the stuff he comes out with is just ridiculous. Yeah. But again, like, I don't want to, he's a major champion now. I think that's going to give him more respect in the game. Maybe it'll make him worse, though. I'm not sure. But six-shot lead to win the US Open. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what Rory, that's along the lines of what Rory did nearly 10 years ago now. I think he is definitely the one that everyone's talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the best player in the world, but, you know, he's one of them.
Definitely is, yeah. So now all the talk is going to be about, can he win Augusta, and is he going to absolutely rip up the place? Will he be hitting wedges into par fives, this kind of stuff? He's going to be the talk of the town now in the lead up to Augusta. And will he, do you think, is he going to, is has he the potential to just destroy the place? Make a mockery almost of it?
No, I don't think so. I think Augusta, people have tried to overpower Augusta many times. I mean, I think, again, you got to hit the ball in the right places at Augusta.
Yeah.
You still got to, you know, chip and putt. And I don't think the fact that there's not much rough at Augusta means that it's going to bring in a lot more people. I think that this are at the Wingfoot, the US Open, a lot of players got their strategy wrong. They thought that they had to hit the fairway.
Yeah.
And there may have been a lot of a lot of people hitting irons off tees or three woods or rescues. And Bryson just went for it and left them. Even if he missed the fairway, he was just leaving himself a wedge and usually missing it in the right spot and was able to wedge it onto the green, even bumping it on. So I don't think that's going to be the same sort of factor in at Augusta. I think Augusta's much more sophisticated than that. But you never know. I mean, like, he could do what Bubba did a few years ago. And, you know, I mean, a lot would talk when Bubba kind of cleared the corner of the 13th at Augusta. People thought, you know, oh, no, this is a different game now. But each major kind of has its own characteristics. You know, he'll have a good chance. But I think players like Rory and Dustin and JT and Brooks might be back. They'll be out to get him, you know.
And come back. Be, like what you said there, you said, you know, it was a bit of a damn squib, and maybe you were expecting more from the US Open because of the coverage in the lead up to it. But I think we were all expecting a lot from it, because since golf has come back, it's just been immense. And there are so many players at the moment who are playing, you know, exceptional golf and at the top of their game. It's almost like with every champion, we're like, oh my God, this guy is going to be around. He's going to win 10 more of these. You know, like Morikawa was the talk of the town. It's another story when we go off to Augusta in a month's time, or 2 months' time nearly. Well, sorry, no, about 6 weeks that we go off to Augusta. It's a different time. And as you say, there's a lot of big players out there who have the potential to win at Augusta. So, let's wait and see on that front. I think it's not a sure thing. Mm,
definitely.
DeChambeau is just going to win everything at a walk now because he's hitting the ball so far. He just won that tournament by 6 shots. And another day, Wolf could have taken him down that stretch. It just didn't happen for Wolf. I think he tensed up, clearly wasn't striking the ball well in those last few holes. And when there's only two and your opponent falls away, then of course you're going to win easily. Well, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. A great for your picks, Nigel. So I double my money. I think anyone who would have put similar to what you were suggesting last week would have doubled their money. Louis and Zalatoris brought in some great results for us in top tens. Zalatoris nearly got two holes in one on Thursday. He got a lovely hole in one on the early in the round, and then it struck a flag, and I don't know how it came out later on.
He should have got that. Was actually a better shot than the actual hole in one.
Yeah,
and it hit the flag dead on, but bounced out. Yeah. So you'd have to wonder about the flags at a Wingfoot.
Yeah. We complain
what they're made of
on the beach, but come in, here we are at an open and they're popping out like that. But a great week for your picks, Annie. So you must have been happy with performances.
Yeah, there. It's great to get some profit. I think we'd almost 10 points of profit, which, you know, it's all about getting profit, you know, when you're backing players. It was a bit disappointing that Hideki had such a bad last day.
Yeah.
Would have been nice to get three players in the each way places. But, you know, can't be greedy.
I'm
happy enough.
Absolutely. What did you think of Rory's form over the week? So T8, what he seemed to take one step forward and two back a couple of times. What did you make of him?
Essentially, he lost it in and around the green. He actually led the field for driving. So it was his short game that really let him down. And that's been a theme of Rory's play for a long time now. So essentially, you know, it's like so many, like nearly every tournament every week, it's won in and around the greens. And that's where Bryson won it. Now, his driving and his approach play set a lot of these things up, but you got to finish it off.
Yeah.
And Rory isn't finishing off. He's not taking his chances. He's not getting up and down when he needs to get up and down at an important point of the round. He had a couple of good rounds, but he had two bad rounds as well, which balanced out into a top 10 finish, you know, which he's been doing a lot of in the majors in the last few years, you know, solid performances. But no, he didn't look like he was ever going to win it.
Yeah.
You know, he said he's maybe not the player he used to be, and that seems to be the case.
Yeah.
I don't know if he cares that much, you know. I think the Masters is probably the only major now, because he hasn't won it, that really gets his juices flowing. And every tournament and every that he's involved in and every major that he plays in, there's always so much talk about it. It's getting repetitive.
Yeah.
He really needs to start showing what he's made of.
Well, again, all the talk this side of the pond anyway, up to November, will be around whether he can complete that slam at Augusta. So it's going to be, you know, spotlight's going to be on him again. Let's see how he deals with it. Yeah, interesting weeks ahead for Rory. On the subject of around the greens at Wingfoot, did you see Rory? I'm sure you did. Rory Sabatini's putt on the 15th.
I didn't see that one, though.
He had a 90-degree putt. So it was one of those ones that you're aiming it off to the right.
Was that the one where you left it up there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Inches on the wrong side of the ridge and it just
stayed. Yeah.
Very embarrassing. So embarrassing for him. He didn't have to put down the slope. He didn't even line it up. He just walked up and hit it. He's like, I want to get off the screen before the cameras picked
it. Yeah. It's in places, the course was even more severe than Augusta.
Yeah.
Which is saying something.
Well,
it's a fascinating course. I don't think I listened to so much stuff. I don't think it was presented in its best light. I think the rough was a big factor, and then the best players kind of negated it.
Yeah,
I just think there was just too much rough in the wrong places. I think they should have been a bit more subtle about it.
Yeah, maybe it rung the greens. Like, there was some very punishing places around the greens. And whereas I'd understand on the fairway, it's decided a fairway where you might want to punish someone. But in around the green, it was, you get a few bad breaks there. But look, that's what it is. That's what it was. I think they just didn't show enough. I would have liked to have seen more of the Rory Sabatini type putts to show. Because it did look for a while like, you know, these guys were just rolling all the putts beautifully. There would have been nightmares out there, and I don't think they showed enough of that. People really struggling with the greens. I would have liked to see that just as an amateur, to see, because when looking at that, I said, well, okay, they're human and these putts are subtle. It's not just fired up there and it'll come back down to the hole. I mean, there's subtle breaks on these things, and if you miss it, you're on the wrong side completely. That was kind of missed for me on some of them. It just looked like, aim it off to right, it's going to come back down to the hole. It's an easy putt. And they weren't at all. But so let's move on then from the US Open into more local news. This is, I've only one news piece really this week, and it's in the lead up to the Irish Open. We've got G Mac and Seamus Power staying over the pond. They're going to be competing at the Corrales tournament in the Dominican Republic. James Shugru, Corkman. So he was over at the US Open last weekend. Great experience for the guy. He's playing with Lee Westwood as well, which would have been a fantastic experience for him. He's gone off to US Masters in November. As of Friday at Wingfoot, he was still not invited to the Irish Open. And at 24, he said, he was asked if Irish Open officials had asked him, and he was surprised that they hadn't. And he said, yeah, a little bit. I thought that I'd done enough to warrant an invitation. Obviously, it's not my decision. I don't know whose decision it is or who hands out invitations, but yeah, I wouldn't dwell on it too much. Now, Lee Westwood did him a massive favor. He came out in his press conference and felt that it needed to be sorted. He needed to get an invite as the amateur champion. And I'm glad to report it was sorted. Someone in the European Tour was listening. So himself, Tom McKibben and Mark Power will make up the trio of amateurs in the Irish Open field. So I presume you had heard that he got the invite, Nigel. Only right that he would get an invite.
Would you? Oh yeah, I mean, it's a no-brainer. I couldn't believe that he didn't have one already.
Yeah,
they'd already lined up, because I looked at the entry list last week. Your man Mark Power was already invited.
Yeah,
before Shugru. Maybe it was just an administrative error, but I don't know. I mean, like, when it comes to the Irish Open in recent years, they haven't respected what either amateurs have done or local professionals have done, whether it be the PGA, Irish PGA champion, or a young guy who's made a massive achievement in winning the amateur championship. they don't recognize that because it's become, but it has become a massive tour event. Now it's this year it's fallen back to being an average tour event because of the year that's in it. But they should still keep a couple of spaces for those players who've achieved something in the domestic game or who've basically represented the country abroad and achieved big things. So, you know, it should have been an automatic thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Fair play to Lee Westwood for highlighting that.
I thought that was incredible of the guy. Not surprising, though. He's that kind of guy, but it was incredible of him to speak out about that when there's so many things he could speak about. So it was great. And it was great to see that the European Tour listened as well as they would to Lee Westwood. I'm not sure he would have got an invite if Lee Westwood hadn't spoken up, if I'm honest.
Well, Lee should be the Ryder Cup captain after Porrick. Lee would have a lot of pull there.
Speaking of Ryder Cups then, Harrington is going to make his return to competitive golf this weekend. He said, I'm really looking forward to returning to competitive golf at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. It's obviously a tournament which holds a very special place in my heart, and I guess it's a nice coincidence that it falls on the week that was originally scheduled for the 2020 Ryder Cup. So it'll be emotional for him in some respects. You know, this was going to be his big week. But nice for him to be returning to competitive golf. I'm not sure whether we'll see a victory from Padraig Harrington, but good to see him back out on the course.
Yeah. I can't believe he hasn't played since the return to golf. I don't know what his personal circumstances are, whether he's lying low for health reasons or whatever. But
I would say so.
Surprised he didn't make an appearance at a couple of events in the States.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Especially like he didn't play the PGA.
That's right.
Which is a strange one, being a former champion. So
a free invite, exactly. Yeah. Well, moving on from there then, so bringing us back into a slot that's getting a lot of feedback, it Rules Corner. So again, there's been a follow-up query. So last week we were talking about red-yellow stakes, Nigel. So we got a query from... I give you one quick guess on Twitter. Who do you think the query came in from?
Donal.
Hey. So Donal was in. He said, look, I'm going to read out what he says. Further to your rules question, I'd welcome official clarification of how to interpret the red penalty area and how it relates to the former yellow hazards on holes 6 and 9 on the yellow course. And any of the red staked areas which are actually cross hazards and not lateral. So... just for those who are not familiar with our 6th and 9th holes on the yellow course, there are par 5s on the yellow course. And on both holes, the tee shots are fairly similar. You've got your fairway, and on either side of the fairway, there is a ditch, okay? And it's a red penalty ditch, but it runs perpendicular, not parallel to the fairway. So it runs perpendicular to the fairway. So if you miss the fairway left, you have the potential of going into that ditch, and if you miss it right, you have the potential to go into that ditch. It's pretty much the same on the 6th and the 9th hole, in fact, it's the same ditch that runs all the way across, but it's not on the fairway. So if you land at that part of the fairway, you are fine. But they don't run what you might call lateral, i.e. along the side of the fairway. They run, it's a cross hazard, as Donal has clarified here, running perpendicular to the fairway. So he says, for example, I have been previously informed, he puts in here, by a senior committee member, that since these hazards are lateral, i.e. red, you can drop within 2 club lengths at either end of the hazard, i.e. in the fairway of either the 5th or the 6th, or based on the diagram on the website attached, he said he could see how that could be interpreted. And that diagram he attached was from the RNA website. He says, if the pictured water hazard has turned 90 degrees and has a wide and shallow hazard, just like our drains, I welcome your opinion on this. So Nigel, this is ultimately the question being, if you hit your ball into the hazard on the 6th yellow and you hit it in on the left-hand side, and let's say you're in the middle, you're crossing into that hazard into the middle of what is, you know, probably a 15 foot, maybe even further, 30 foot wide hazard. If you go into the middle of that, someone has said to him, you can drop to the left or to the right of that hazard, i.e. you can go out into the 5th fairway in this case. What is your opinion of that? I know what the answer is, but what do you feel on that one? Considering what we discussed last week and your understanding of the rules, I've gone into the middle of the ditch on the sixth. Can I go either side?
Yeah, it's where it crossed the hazard, and it's two club lengths either side of where it crossed.
Where it crossed, exactly. You're exactly right. So anyone who's interpreted that as you can go either side of the hazard is not correct. I'm not sure what the old, I know what the old rule was, as in 2 years ago on this one, that you could have actually, there was a separate part of the red rule which allowed you to go to the opposite point to where your ball crossed the hazard, but it didn't mean you could go to the side of the hazard itself. But you could go to the opposite point. So if you crossed over at a point, you could draw a line from there, no closer to the hole, and go over to that side of the hazard. But that's no longer in place in the current rules on red. Red is plain and simple. There's no complication beyond this when it comes to red or a yellow hazard. Everything is from your point of entry. So the penalty area itself is pretty much irrelevant. It's your point of entry into the penalty area that your relief will be taken from. You can either draw a line from the flag back to that point of entry and keep going back, or in the case of a red, you can take two club lengths, as you correctly said, Nigel, from that point of entry. And in the case of the sixth yellow, if you go into the middle of that ditch, bad news, folks. You have to come right back. If you're going to take two club lengths, you're still behind that ditch. And in fact, most people there, even as it is a red penalty area, won't be taking two club lengths from the hazard, because you're not going to clear the hazard then. There's a bit of a tree there or a bit of a bush going across it. So really your only option when you go into the hazard, or the penalty area, I should say, on the sixth and the ninth, is to come back the line, draw that line between the flag and where your ball crossed, keep coming back until you find some clearance, and then try and go over that penalty area. It's very simple. Misunderstood by many, many people, clearly is the case, including some, as he said, former senior committee members who feel they can drop either side of the hazard. That is not correct. That's a false interpretation of the rules. I think it's misunderstood because people see a lateral as the old understanding was with a yellow, you had to go back over the hazard again. So no matter what you did, you had to play over the hazard area. With a red, with lateral, you were able to take the hazard out of play by coming two club lengths to the side. That was the kind of interpretation is what lateral meant and what the yellow meant. But actually, it is about your point of entry. And you can take lateral from the point of entry, not lateral from the hazard itself. That's where the interpretation seems to be incorrect. So I just said I'd clarify that as it was asked. Thank you, Donald, for sharing that. I'm sure in clubs all around the country, people have different interpretations of this, but it is quite clear. Point of entry, folks. Okay, on to the Irish Open itself then. So Galgorm, Spa and Golf Resort in Ballymena, par 71, 7,105 yards. The Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, we've played in Northern Ireland for the fourth time since 2012. And as Galgorm Castle makes its first European Tour debut this week, it's a tree-lined course, opened in 1997, designed by Simon Gidman. It has been a regular fixture on the Challenge Tour since 2013. Recently hosted the INI Open. The 2020 Irish Open was scheduled, as we said before, for Mount Juliet, and moved here because of the coronavirus, and being able to bring the likes of Shane Lowry back from the US into play golf in Northern Ireland was the only option available to us. Shane Lowry became just the third amateur in history to win it in 2009, to win in a European Tour event. He was just the third amateur to do that in the European Tour, to win it in 2009 as an amateur, but he is far from the only major champion to lift the Irish Open trophy. We've got an incredible list of winners. The event, which was first held in 1975, we've got Ben Crenshaw, Hubert Green, Seve, Uzi, Jose Maria, Nick Faldo, Sergio Garcia, Michael Campbell, Padraig Harrington, Rory McIlroy, the list goes on. There's been some classics. Now, I'm going to give you a few classics. I want you to pick your favourite. Now, this is going to be tough. So, Rory's win at the K Club 2016, and that three wood on the 16th. Oh, my God. One of probably the greatest shots ever played in an Irish Open. Shane's win in Balltrae in 2009. Harrington's win at Adair in 2007. The year Woosie beat Walton. That was a devastating one for Irish people. And a playoff in 89. Langer's absolutely dominant victory at Portmarnock in 87, where he won by 10 shots to the field. Seve, any of Seve's wins, 83, 85, 86. John O'Leary's win in 82, recently passed away. We spoke about John and Apollo recently enough. He won in 1982. And Christy O'Connor Jr., his win at Woodbrook in 75. Nigel, if you were to pick one of those, or I'll accept any other if you have another, what for you is your most memorable Irish Open?
It's probably Seve's win in 85. He beat Langer in the playoff. That's probably the one that springs to mind.
That in Royal Dublin, yes?
That was in Royal Dublin.
And you were at
it
on the Friday.
I was at it, yeah. I was only a kid there with my brother and cousin, weaving through people's legs to get out to the front to see him putting the green. It was fantastic. We were racing around the fairways. It was kind of an idyllic memory.
Yeah.
And Seve was in his pomp, really. You know, he was a major champion. And he was a real rock star at that stage, and everyone loved him. He just the charisma, the charm, the style of play. You know, he could hit it all over the place, and then just escape from all sorts of areas. Short game was unreal, and I don't think it's probably talked about enough, but his putting was unreal. He was such a clutch putter. Yeah, that's my favorite memory because it's such a childhood memory.
Of course, yeah.
I remember the 88 one because I was becoming a big Faldo fan at the time, and I watched Faldo in one of the practice days, and also I saw him on the Saturday, follow him around. I think Olathabal won it that year in 88. Now, more recently, I was at Carton House when Paul Casey won it, yeah. And I backed him, so I was very happy about that. I didn't actually see he held a massive eagle putt on the 18th at Carton House. And I was back at the 17th green, or near the 18th tee, and I missed the putt, but the roar was unreal.
Yeah.
I had a nice couple of quid on him that week. I backed him in running. I didn't back him before the event. I was at the Royal County Down in 2015 on the Sunday. So I saw the playoff when Soren Kelson won. I think he beat Pepperell and Wiesberger. So I got a good vantage point for the 18th there. So that was a rough day. That was tough conditions.
Yeah.
But we were staying up in Newcastle, up in the Slieve Donard. So I actually saw Miguel Angel Jimenez having dinner on his own with people coming up to him looking for selfies. I saw Soren Kelson actually in the car park just with his caddy and having a, I think they'd just gone down to Newcastle town and had a pretty muted celebration, right, considering he just won the Irish Open. And then more recently, I didn't get to the K Club when Rory won. Unfortunately, I was down in Kerry. The last Irish Open I went to was Port Stewart. I remember I sent you the photos when Gavin had the 64 on Sunday.
Yeah.
I was behind the green when Ram finally won the tournament. Anyway, so but the weather wasn't great that day, but it was, you know, it was a good tournament. I think Hideki played that day. There was a good field. Justin Rose was there. And the course was forgiving, but you know, it was a good test as well.
Yeah.
Last year I loved Port Rush and the fact that the Open came to Ireland. But all reports I heard about Lahinch last year was supposed to be brilliant.
Yeah.
The party on Saturday night was supposed to be incredible. So I'm disappointed. That was probably of all the Irish Opens to have missed, I think that one would have been a good one to go to.
Yeah, like especially with the town being right there in the middle of the course.
Yeah,
it would have been incredible, Irish. That's for sure. Yeah,
I mean the tournament has had since it was revived back in '75, which is it was played in one of our favourite courses in Woodbrook.
Yes.
Chrissy Connor Jr. That was when Carroll's revived the tournament. It's had a real roller coaster of an existence. You know, it's been one of the major events of the European Tour to almost being an event that was pushed off the tour. I mean, back in the early, the late noughties and the early 2010s, it had no sponsor. You know, it had to rely on Bord Falchuk to stump up some cash. It was, you know, it's had good days and bad days, you know.
Yeah.
Generally, it's always supported. It's just a shame, obviously, the fans always support and come out in their droves for the Irish Open, but unfortunately this year it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I encourage everyone to watch it this week. It'll be on RTE and Sky from 1 o'clock on Thursday.
Plenty of coverage. And on Woodbrook there, I just would recommend if anyone is down there to play around the golf, go into the clubhouse. There's some fantastic pictures of Irish Open legends that played down there. So yeah, it's definitely worth a walk in. Okay, so moving on then to Nigel's picks. So this week we're focusing obviously on the Irish Open. So who are we putting? Is it 100 points on Shane Lowry and half a point on everyone else? Or how have you worked it out?
I've kind of focused on avoiding mainly Irish players because it's a big pressure to win your national tournament. I know you mentioned a few of the past winners like Shane and Porrick and Adair and John O'Leary and Port Barnett, but there were 25 years between Porrick winning and John O'Leary winning. And Porrick took a long time to win the Irish Open. It was like a fifth major for him. So it's not easy for an Irish person to win the Irish Open. It's a big, it's an added pressure. Rory treated it almost like a fifth major as well when he won.
Yeah.
You saw how he celebrated. It was, you know, it was a big deal for him. So I'm kind of focusing on Northern European players because it's going to be cold this week and quite blustery, maybe a bit of rain on Friday. It's going to be very much Irish autumnal conditions. Mm-hmm. So I'll focus on Northern European and British and maybe an Irish player as well. This week's headline selection is a guy who's currently in a nice run of form. He's a Dutch player. He's only recently got onto the tour. He's a guy called Will Besseling. Not many people would have heard of him. But Galgorm has hosted the Northern Ireland Open on the Challenge Tour since 2013. And Besseling was top 10 there in 2017 and 2018. He's also got very good current form. He was top three at Valderrama. It was 2 or 3 weeks ago. The top three finish at one of the Austrian events. He's had top 15s as well in the UK recently. He's top, I think he was 14th in Portugal Masters, so he's in a great run of form since the lockdown. He's got course form as well, and he's one of these players who's on the rise. He's got the sort of profile that could win. He's a small bit of a dark horse, but he's got the profile and the course and recent form to win this. He's 30-1 at the moment. So the bookies know he's got a chance. 30-1, 2 points each way. Will Besseling is the headline selection. Second selection is a guy called Callum Hill. I put him up before. He's an up-and-coming Scottish player. He's got a lot of game. And he's definitely one that's going to be talked about in the future. I think this could be the stepping stone that leads him into the big time. He's a former winner of the Northern Ireland Open at Galgorm in 2018. Now, he won at 19 under par then. It was a bit of a birdie fest. It won't be as easy this week, but he's shown that he can perform in tougher conditions in sort of British and Irish tracks. He was top 10 at the Belfry, the UK Championship, only a few weeks ago, and was also top 10 at Celtic Manor a couple of weeks before that. So he's also a man with serious recent form in the UK, and he's a big prospect for the future. He's 35-1, 1.5 points each way. Third selection is Richie Ramsey at 50-1, a point each way. Richie is a man who loves playing in Ireland. He was tied runner-up to John Rahm in up the road at Port Stewart in 2017. He's shown he loves playing in tough conditions. I think he went well at the K Club as well back in 2016. I just think he's the sort of guy who's going to love this week. And at 50-1, I think he's a decent price. The fourth selection is Marcus Armitage. He's a bit of a character, this guy. He's played very well, though, this year. He's in the UK swing. He's got one top 10 and a couple of top 20s. He was in form before the lockdown. He's been solid since the return to golf. And he's played well at the Northern Ireland Open before. He's had a top 10 there before. So again, he's a guy with he's got good form this season. He's got course form. And, you know, he's a nice price at 80-1, a point each way. The fifth selection is a guy who's gone very well in the Irish Open before. He's a guy called Matthew Southgate from England. He's 100-1 and going 0.75 points each way. Matthew was top three finish at the Irish Open in 2017 and a top five finish at the K Club in 2016. So he's made a lot of money out of the Irish Open. He loves playing in Ireland. I think his form has been a bit patchy this season, but I think playing over here, you know, inspires him and raises his game. I think 100-1 is way overpriced for a guy like him. And our final selection is our only Irish man. He makes a grade. He's our outsider at 300-1. It's Colin Moriarty, a half point each way. As you mentioned in the previous podcast, Colin was unfortunate to lose out in the Irish PGA Championship at Rodenstown. Again, in tough conditions. He lost out to Simon Thornton in a playoff. I think he's always had very strong game. He's a guy, he's kept on the PGA circuit around Ireland, but he would not be out of place on the European Tour. He's easily capable of playing the Challenge Tour, for instance. He's a guy who's actually led the Open at one stage back in 2010. He led it briefly at St. Andrews. He's got experience. He plays tough courses well in Ireland. And at 300-1, he's worth up at a half a point each way. So there are the selections this week for the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. It's Will Besseling, 30-1, 2 points each way. Callum Hill, 35-1, 1.5 points each way. Richie Ramsey, 50-1, a point each way. Marcus Armitage, 80-1, a point each way. Matthew Southgate, 100-1, 3/4 of a point each way. And Colin Moriarty, 300-1, 0.5 point each way.
Brilliant. Thanks, Nigel. So any golf plan for this weekend?
I may play Saturday. I'm not really. My game is in trauma at the moment.
So we had the weekend just gone, and I know I built it up last week. So we had the captain's prize at Donabate on Saturday just gone by. It was the final round. You were in the fourth last group going out, which was a great position to be in. And on the day you played with ultimately the winner. You said now. It must be stated that Brian Foley, who's a friend of the pod, actually had the lowest score over the 2 days, but he wouldn't have been eligible to win it. But you played with the ultimate captain's prize winner on the day, Tony Wilkinson, who shot the lights out. And what were tough conditions, I thought? It was a tough day. How did it go? Obviously, being in contention takes a lot out of people, but how did it go for you?
Experience. Well, the front line was perfect. Well, almost perfect. It was only one over par. Shot 37 going out. Held a few putts from off the green. It was a tough day, but I felt I was coping well. But we had to let a group through on the second hole. Guy played the wrong ball, had to go back to the tee. The group that we let through weren't the quickest. So it ended up being a very long front nine holes, and when I got to the back nine, I felt my game was getting ragged and it only got worse, and really the wheels came off big style on the back nine. I was, even though I had such a good front nine, I was still four shots behind Tony. He was playing off 16. You know, Tony played very well, and you know, with the shots he had an advantage, it was going to be very difficult for me to catch him. And when I made the turn, I felt I still had a chance, but I played the 10th badly. I made a mess of getting up and down on the 10th, missed a birdie, and he got a birdie on the 11th. And on the 12th, I had a disaster, and that was it, really. I kind of threw in the towel. I was well back, and I should have actually copped on and tried to win the gross, which I was actually, I didn't realize I was still in the chance for. But and it ended up being a long day. And it was, you know, it's a tiring day.
And it just shows you there, like the pros have, you know, the 5 hours is a fast round. Whereas I'd be in the same boat as yourself. Anything over like 4.5 hours is long. 4.5 hours is tough, but 5 hours is just, no, like waiting over every shot almost. Very frustrating. I don't know how the pros do it.
I know. That's mad.
So this weekend we have, there's nothing major on, right? It's just a singles, isn't it? Just a standard singles.
Yeah, just a normal singles here. It's an open singles on Sunday as well. Timesheet's very busy though.
Yeah.
I guess with the lockdown, people have nothing else to do.
That's it, yeah. Right, well, have a good weekend. I'm sure I'll see you down there.
You too.
And get form back, don't
I'll
you?
I'll talk to you in the weekend.
Yeah. All right. Take care now.
Cool. Cheers, dude.
You know.
Thanks for that. Bye.
So just to confirm, this podcast is not sponsored in any way. All views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever with which I have been, am now, or will be affiliated. Please do subscribe to the podcast, Brad Golf TV. You'll find me on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, etc., etc. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. It's Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. On Facebook, you'll find me at bradgolf.ie. And you can also drop me an email at bradgolftv@gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing from you in the weeks and months ahead. You've been listening to Brad Golf Podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please do come back soon and join me for another round.